This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen joining you. The prognosis for men diagnosed with prostate cancer has never been brighter. Doctors now have a variety of ways to treat prostate cancer, including surgery, radiation, immunotherapy, and drugs that slow the growth of cancer cells. We'll hear with more on the medications being used is Andrew Bergdorf. He is the adult hematology-oncology clinical pharmacist for the Upstate Cancer Center. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So we've come a long way, I guess, with the medications that can be used to treat prostate cancer. These are what we call the chemotherapy drugs. Am I correct?
Yes. Probably the most exciting two that have hit the market recently are the Zytiga and Xtandi, which are some oral medications that impact prostate cancer.
So these are new. These are brand new drugs.
Relatively speaking, in the last couple years. And we've developed some experience with them now and tested them in a couple different settings.
So these are the drugs that are typically part of what we call the chemotherapy part or regimen in terms of treatment of prostate cancer. And as I said, we have a variety of ways of treating prostate cancer, but these are considered part of the chemotherapy regimen.
Yes, and it's usually related to people who are a little bit further along with the disease. So people that might have more limited disease could more likely get maybe watch and wait, or they could get a surgical involvement, or they could also have radiation therapy, and then usually people that are a little bit further down the line for locally advanced disease or disease that's spread throughout the body, they would be more candidates to get these medications.
So in fact, as you've kind of alluded to, the things that determine what kind of treatments are undertaken are the stage of the tumor, the level of PSA, for example, or the Gleason score, the grade of the tumor, how much of the prostate is affected, and whether, in effect, this has spread outside of the prostate. All of those factors come together to determine what the treatment regimen would be. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
But what you just said before that was that when you have people with a little bit more advanced state of prostate cancer, those are the ones more often would be given either a combination of therapies or primarily the chemotherapy.
Correct.
So are there other factors that play a role in the decision-making? In other words, do things like the toxicity of the drugs or the side effects or the person's age affect, or whether they've had past treatments of any kind, do those play a role in the medications that are chosen?
Absolutely. I think with any chemotherapy, we always employ an individualized approach. For instance, if somebody doesn't have a great performance status, as in, they're not that mobile, or they're bedbound or something like that, then, they're less of a candidate to get something like a harsh chemotherapy like docetaxel. One of the new oral medications that we talked about, the enzalutamide or Xtandi, for instance, has a specific contraindication with people who have had seizures or have a propensity that might be more likely to have seizures. So certainly we, consider all those things before we put anyone on any particular regimen.
So there are right now currently on the market or available almost 24 medications that are currently approved for use. So basically, can you help us understand what are the mechanisms that underlie the use of these drugs? In other words, what are the drugs doing? Is there a general principle underlying most of them? And then we'll talk specifically about the ones you've mentioned.
Sure. As a general overview, the good thing for pharmacists and providers alike is that even though there's, one or two dozen of these drugs, they really belong to a few different categories. Okay, and so we have one group that's called like the luteinizing hormone releasing hormone agonists, and they're a group of medications that, the luteinizing hormone basically tells the testes to make more testosterone. So when, interestingly, it sounds like if you were doing an agonist or you were increasing the amount of stimulation there, that might be making more testosterone. But in fact, there's kind of a negative feedback loop that says, hey, if you produce too much of this hormone, the body will end up turning around and shutting it off.
But the point here is that it's attempting to shut down the production of testosterone, which increases the production of the cancer cells? Is it that the testosterone makes the cancer cells more vigorous?
Yes. So the testosterone is the driver of, you know, often of the prostate cancer. And so when you can shut that down via various mechanisms, you know, that benefits you.
So what drugs fall into that category of the luteinizing agonist?
There's the goserelin, the luprolide. Those are probably the most common. There's some other ones that are less commonly seen, the triptorelin and historelin.
Do they have any other names? Because those names.
The other one that we most commonly, luprolide is Lupron. I mean, that one is very, very popular.
Mm-hmm. So that mechanism basically is, so that's one category of mechanism where it's trying to tell the testes, don't make any more testosterone.
Right, right.
Or and no, make more testosterone. It's basically.
No, don't make as much testosterone.
Right, okay.
And then there's also a couple medications that are in a bit of a smaller category called like the anti-androgens, and they're basically like a testosterone-specific blocker.
And so androgen is, explain that.
I'm sorry. So androgen is kind of another word for the type of thing that testosterone is that, again, stimulates the cancer cells.
So these two so far, and I'm assuming all of them, all these categories, the underlying principle here is to somehow thwart or stop the production of these cancer cells. You're trying to create an environment where they can't survive or where it stops the speedy division of these cells. Is that correct?
Yeah. What you're doing is stopping the nectar that causes the proliferation.
The nectar meaning the food?
Yeah.
Okay. So is there a third category as well?
You know, those are, you know, the, in general, some of the, again, early medications used, you know, later on.
Early, but, you mean early in the course of the disease?
Yeah, it could or be early in the course of the disease as far as maybe people with, the people that are first starting to need medication therapy will often start on what they call androgen deprivation therapy. And again, that's what a lot of these medications are.
But if they have more advanced disease?
If you have more advanced disease, so markers of that would be if you had a really high PSA, if you had advanced disease to start out where the, you know, you had
metastases
that had circulated throughout the body, especially at the time of diagnosis, or if you started out with kind of lesser disease, and then you'd progress to this.
So it would be a more aggressive type of tumor, yep. Aggressive type of cell, and you were really rapidly, it was spreading in a rapid fashion.
Right. The other thing would be metastases, especially to the bone, like if you notice bone involvement. Again, those are certainly signs of significant concern and advanced disease.
So what type of medication would you use in that circumstance?
Those guys specifically usually start on docetaxel, or Taxotere is the brand name of that one. And again, that one is usually they give it every 3 weeks. There's somewhat of a risk of people having some infusion-type reactions to that or some moderate nausea, vomiting.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with pharmacist Andrew Bergdorf, and we're talking about the range of medications being used to treat prostate cancer. But at the core of all of this, basically you're trying to create an environment where the cancer isn't going to survive or is going to be somehow blocked. But at what cost, I guess? In other words, from two standpoints, I want to talk about the cost. The actual cost, which I want to get to after, but how about the side effects? You were starting to allude to some side effects here. How toxic are these drugs, and how much more ill do they make the patient?
The docetaxel or Taxotere that I mentioned a minute ago, which was begin our kind of group of like cytotoxic chemotherapy, like, hey, I'm just going to go in and kill these rapidly proliferating cells, is kind of harsh. Actually, especially the way it's given in this setting is like an once every three week setting. And, you know, it can cause most significantly like a neutropenia or decrease in your white blood cells, which makes you at risk for infection, you know, fatigue and that type of thing.
Nausea.
Some nausea, vomiting. It's not, you know, top of the list as far as nausea, vomiting, but certainly to some degree. Some kind of like neuropathy or that type of thing.
So there are many, many side effects.
Yeah.
Is that true for across the board for all of these different prostate cancer medications?
The side effects differ quite significantly. So, for instance, we were talking before about the LHRH agonists like Lupron. And those ones, when you start messing around with the androgens, you can get some hot flashes and
hormonal type
changes, changes in the breast tissue or changes in sex drive and that type of thing.
Well, the bottom line is, how effective are these? I mean, do they actually thwart the cancer growth and do they prolong life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And each of them in the setting that they're used for has evidence for increasing overall survival, which is our, you know, is really the barometer for medication efficacy in the cancer setting. You know, same thing with docetaxel, in that if you use it on the patients who have the advanced disease, you will see improved survival in those folks.
So the two newer drugs that you mentioned before, what's significant about them? What makes them unique?
Well, let's see. They're a little bit more targeted agents. They are used specifically in patients that have metastatic, what they call castrate-resistant prostate cancer, which either means you've had surgery to remove your testes or you've had the androgen deprivation therapy, which is kind of the medical equivalent. And you can use, like, for instance, the Zytiga or abiraterone. You can use that one before or after docetaxel.
So they can be used in combination. But do they cause, I mean, are these do they have less side effects associated with them?
I would say, yeah, in comparison specifically to docetaxel. So, for instance, if you had somebody who was, you know, 85 years old, they're not probably going to tolerate docetaxel that well. No, 85-year-olds
come in. It's a harsher drug.
Yeah. So if you had the option to use, you know, in a more frail patient or someone who might be a little bit more sensitive to chemotherapy, certainly it would be reasonable to use that before docetaxel, perhaps, in that setting.
So let me get to the other aspect of cost. It seems to me that I've read somewhere that some of these drugs can cost upwards between up to $10,000 a month, some little as little as $1,500 a month. How can people afford to pay for this? Is this largely being covered by insurance?
Fortunately, the insurance industry has now come around to insuring the oral chemotherapy meds, you know, relatively appropriately. But, you know, if you're in an environment where you have to do significant cost sharing, let's say a plan where you pay 20% and they pay 80% or something like that, I mean, not many of us have an extra $2,000 a month in their pocket.
So it is really a stress, a major stress. And now there's some attempts to put generic drugs into the mix here, so that are these going to be more cost effective?
I mean, there is indeed, and there's, you know, we have our generalized, you know, generic medications that are for some of the things that might be less complex, and then there's a newer term that's kind of out, that's kind of a buzzword called biosimilars, and that's talking about basically making generic versions of some of our more complex protein and complex targeted therapies.
And are those going to be available?
They're starting to come to market here, probably in the next month or two. And there's a biosimilar coming out for a white blood cell stimulator. And, you know, as that kind of moves forward, I think other people will be coming into that arena.
So there's a little bit of hope in terms of cost relief?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And
so overall, it sounds to me that the future is brighter for people who have prostate cancer, even advanced prostate cancer, in that there are drugs that can help, can prolong life, can be effective, and now they may even be more cost effective going forward.
Absolutely.
Does that sound likely to you?
Yeah. I think that's the direction we're going, and there's also opportunities for folks to get assistance from, you know, perhaps the American Cancer Society or the Cancer Financial Assistance Coalition, which can direct you to resources to hopefully maybe offset some of those costs you're incurring.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. My guest has been Andrew Bergdorf. He is basically the adult hematology and oncology clinical pharmacist for Upstate Cancer Center. And that's very, very important information. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.